Well, welcome to iPharmRx, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iPharmRx, and today's topic, vitamin D and fish oil supplementation. For more than 30 years, there's been pretty strong epidemiological data indicating that people who have diets rich in omega-3 fatty acids appear to be at significantly lower risk of cardiovascular disease. And similarly, low vitamin D stores have been linked to a host of diseases, including multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes, respiratory and cardiovascular diseases, as well as certain types of cancer. To date, the results of randomized controlled trials using vitamin and food supplements have been generally disappointing, but there has been criticism that the populations included in these trials were relatively low risk, you know, young and otherwise healthy people. To get a definitive answer, the NIH funded one of the largest studies ever conducted examining the health benefits of vitamin D and fish oil. And joining me today to talk about the results of the VITAL study, which was published in January 2019 in the New England Journal of Medicine, are Anthony Todd, Nicole Slater, and Sean Smithgall. Dr. Todd is an Ambulatory Care Academia Pharmacy Practice Fellow, and Drs. Slater and Smithgall are on faculty with Auburn University Harrison School of Pharmacy and based in Mobile, Alabama. Our guest today wrote a commentary for iPharmRx entitled, Need a Vitality Boost? Rethink Vitamin D and Fish Oil Supplements. Well, Anthony, Nicole, welcome back to the iPharmRx podcast, and Sean, it's great to have you as a first-time contributor.
Yes, Stuart, I'm excited to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Yes, Stuart, thank you so much for having us again.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing RB, a 63-year-old African-American male, in the family medicine clinic today for a routine follow-up visit. You've been working with a patient for the past 6 months to get his blood cholesterol to an LDL target of less than 70. And the patient states that he's been taking his medications as prescribed. He's actually been checking his blood pressure several times a week and records the results in a logbook, walks a couple of times a week around the block, and is eating more fruits and vegetables. In addition to dyslipidemia, RB has a history of hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and he's obese. Now, 2 years ago, RB had his first colonoscopy and had 4 polyps removed. And because the patient has a strong family history of cardiovascular disease and has an elevated coronary calcium score, the primary care provider believes an aggressive lipid-lowering strategy is appropriate. So RB currently takes valsartan, chlorthalidone, amlodipine, metformin, atorvastatin 80, and ezetimibe 10 milligrams daily. In addition to these prescribed medications, RB is also taking 1 turmeric, cinnamon, and fish oil capsule, as well as vitamin D 1000 IUs every morning. RB was told that he has a vitamin D stores that are very low, and that's why he started taking vitamin D about a year ago. He weighs 198 pounds, has a BMI of 28.9. Blood pressure taken in clinic was 128 over 64, which is consistent with his readings he's getting at home. And he has a fasting lipid panel done this morning, as well as a Chem7 and an A1C. And you're happy to report to RB that his LDL cholesterol is at goal. It was 66, triglycerides of 206. In addition, his electrolytes were all normal. Blood glucose was 98 and an A1C of 6.8. And looking through his chart, you notice that his 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations was 22 nanograms per deciliter about a year ago. Now, this was a lengthy case with lots of information. But Nicole, before we get started, I'm hoping that you can give us some insights about what's going through your mind in this case. What additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter?
Sure. So first, I think RB needs to be commended for remaining adherent to his medications and his lifestyle interventions. There are several patients, as we know, with this exact past medical history who would not be so well controlled and adherent to their regimens. So I think I would first like to know why RB is taking the turmeric and the cinnamon to assess his understanding of the supplements and their role in his health.
I agree with understanding his motivation to take supplements, since it appears to be a personal choice of his. I'm also pleased to see a patient who has taken ownership of his health and well-being.
And then some other additional information, you know, that I would want to collect on this patient would be his smoking status, because it's important to allow for an accurate estimation of his clinical ASCVD risk score. And we kind of estimated it to be about 25 or 26% based on current lab findings and vitals, assuming no tobacco use, though this is likely an overestimation given his low LDL and control. I also think the dose of the fish oil supplement that he is using would be important to know, and also previous weights could help us determine weight loss over time and how that's playing into his health.
I'll also add that dietary intake of fish would be important to know, especially in our patient population here, since we practice in a coastal city where seafood is more readily available for our patients. And confirming whether he's taking vitamin D2 versus D3 so we can determine the potency of the supplement.
And then as we consider any additional treatment options, I think it's important that we at least address some of the recent evidence that's come out concerning fish oil, specifically EPA and the use of aspirin in a lot of patients. So the recent REDUCE-IT trial, it actually showed that the addition of 4 grams per day of pure EPA to statin therapy lowered the risk of cardiovascular events in high-risk patients. Although that benefit did appear to favor those for secondary prevention and those not currently taking ezetimibe, so that actually wouldn't match our patient right now. And we typically don't consider triglyceride-lowering therapy until the triglycerides are greater than 500 and especially even greater than 1,000, just so we can help to minimize that risk of pancreatitis. Also, the recent ASCEND study, it showed that while there was a significant reduction in vascular events with the use of aspirin for primary prevention in patients with diabetes, it was counterbalanced with an increased risk of bleeding. And so as our patient matches those included in the ASCEND study, I likely would not recommend aspirin for primary prevention at this time. And then finally, while the Endocrine Society, they do recommend a target vitamin D level greater than 30, the Institutes of Medicine actually recommend a vitamin D level greater than 20 as sufficient for nearly all persons. So a repeat vitamin D level may not be necessary at this time, since his previous level was greater than 20 and he's been adherent to the recommended maintenance dose of vitamin D.
So Anthony, let's talk about the VITAL study. The results of the study were actually reported in two separate manuscripts published on the same day in the New England Journal of Medicine. The first paper is entitled Marine N3 Fatty Acids and Prevention of Cardiovascular Disease and Cancer. And the second paper is entitled Vitamin D Supplements and Prevention of Cancer and Cardiovascular Disease. I'm not sure why they switched the order of cancer and cardiovascular disease in the title of those two papers, but nonetheless, for those in our audience who haven't read the papers, can you give us a brief synopsis of the study design and the major findings?
So the VITAL study was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial with a 2x2 factorial design and a median follow-up of about 5 years. There was over 25,000 patients that were randomized, but they were first randomized 1-to-1 to active or placebo vitamin D at a dose of 2,000 international units once a day. And then they were randomized 1-to-1 to active or placebo omega-3 fatty acids at a dose of 1 gram per day as a fish oil capsule containing 460 milligrams of EPA and 380 milligrams of DHA. So there's a total of 4 possible treatment groups. The primary efficacy outcomes were major cardiovascular events, which was a composite of MI, stroke, and death from cardiovascular causes, as well as invasive cancer of any type. The secondary cardiovascular outcomes were major CV events plus coronary revascularization and the individual components of the primary cardiovascular outcome. The secondary cancer outcomes were incident colorectal, breast, and prostate cancers and death from cancer. What these studies showed, though, is that neither vitamin D nor omega-3 fatty acids significantly reduced the risk of cardiovascular disease or cancer primary endpoints when compared to placebo. They did do some subgroup analyses, which showed that the rate of invasive cancer was significantly reduced with vitamin D compared to placebo. in patients with a BMI less than 25. And then the rate of major cardiovascular events was significantly reduced with omega-3 fatty acids in participants who consumed less than a median of 1.5 servings of fish per week. There were no interactions between the two active treatments in the 2x2 factorial design.
So, Anthony, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be some of the key strengths and limitations of the study. Are there any potential sources of bias or perhaps confounders that you think may have impacted the results? What about generalizability? Are there any important limitations as to whom the results might be applied?
Yeah, so the VITAL study had several strengths. It had a very robust trial design, a very large sample size with racial and geographic diversity. There's a really long duration of follow-up and high rates of adherence to the trial regimens. Those assigned to the active vitamin D group, they did achieve target levels per the Endocrine Society. And additionally, the dose of the omega-3 fatty acids that was used is actually recommended by the American Heart Association for cardioprotection in secondary prevention and is twice the recommended dose for cardioprotection in healthy populations without established coronary heart disease. Now, the VITAL study does have some limitations. They did use an annual questionnaire to assess adherence and potential side effects of the trial regimens. And so that's subjective in nature and could allow for the potential of reporting bias in what we see. Then also, a lot of the patients did use outside vitamin D and fish oil supplements, which could confound the results and dilute the effects of the trial regimens themselves. It's also plausible that the presence of DHA rather than pure EPA could diminish the efficacy of the omega-3 fatty acids in reducing CV events, since pure EPA has not been shown to raise LDL levels.
And I'd like to add that I agree with Anthony that the use of annual questionnaires to assess adherence increases the potential for the recall bias. And personally, I have difficulty recalling what I ate for dinner last week, let alone how many doses of medication I took over the last 12 months. On another note, I was impressed with the lengths the investigators went to in order to confirm reporting of the primary outcomes, particularly with patient death, including assessing medical records and having independent panels of physicians review those records for accuracy.
So, Sean, let's return to our case. Recall that RB has a serum triglycerides greater than 200 milligrams per deciliter, and his serum vitamin D stores was lower than 30 nanograms per ml about a year ago. So, based on the VITAL study, do you think he should continue either fish oil or vitamin D supplementation? And if so, do you think the doses are adequate? And if not, what would be your approach to talking to RB about his use of these supplements?
Well, because of his history of very low vitamin D, he likely would benefit from continuation of his vitamin D supplement, which is currently at an appropriate maintenance dose. Since the study showed an approximated 10 nanograms per deciliter increase in vitamin D levels in the patients who took 2,000 international units a day after 1 year, I think it's safe to assume RB would see a similar benefit given he has also taken the medication for a year. Warranted, he's taking the correct form of vitamin D, which in this case we'd hope it's vitamin D3.
Exactly. And in contrast to that, I do not think that RB would benefit from his fish oil supplementation based on the results seen in the VITAL study. I think more evidence is needed concerning the additional benefits of fish oil and specifically EPA in high-risk patients currently on statin and ezetimibe for primary prevention of cardiovascular disease. Again, I would definitely praise the patient for his chronic disease control, giving him a positive reinforcement for reducing his risk of cardiovascular disease on his own. And this approach would really help with rapport, as then I counsel him on the uncertainty of the benefit of fish oil at this time for cardiovascular risk reduction with no apparent benefit in cancer prevention based on this study.
So Sean, Nicole, Anthony, I want to thank you all for joining me today to discuss the use of supplementations to prevent cardiovascular disease and cancer. And I think the results of the VITAL studies suggest that these agents probably don't provide much benefit to most patients. There may be some subgroups that would derive a benefit from supplementation, but that hypothesis hasn't been clearly tested. Well, tell us what you think. Is this the death bell for vitamin D and fish oil supplementation? In the absence of overt deficiency, are there specific patient populations you believe should still receive vitamin D? And what about fish oil supplements? Well, remember, only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And if you are a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacist and want to earn recertification credit for this program, check out the link on our website. We've partnered with the American Pharmacists Association to make select content on iFormRx available for board recertification credit in bite-sized chunks. Well, until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.